When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hello. So no one told you the season was going to be this way. Your rank's a joke. Team's broke. Your preseason data's DOA. Our week-to-week scores are stuck in second gear. But when it hasn't been your day, your game week, or your year, WGTA are there for you. And yeah, despite a subpar game week this week, we are here indeed to talk FBL. So keep you ticking over until the Friday night deadline coming up. I'm joined today, of course, by Nick. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. Thank you. Fantastic intro, as always, Tom there. I'm here, again, for another pod, despite accusations from the former that I'm currently whip-ad and wouldn't be able to make it due to the home duties of being... Just to say, here we are who got the assist. You can find us on Twitter at WGTA_FPL or at WGTA_Nick. So make sure to follow us there and... make sure to listen and subscribe across the various pod repositories out there, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, SoundCloud, whatever you'd like. And make sure to give us a review as well, but not one that says that we basically scripted the entire pod, because I don't know how someone would think that we have time, like in our evenings and during our day, busy life schedules, to actually script the entire pod. I think that's the most ridiculous thing I've heard in a long time. Say that we're essentially talking out of script the entire pod. I don't know what you think, Tom.
I don't know how that's even possible. We spoke about it on the intro pod, but this is at work. Like, we're both used to having something to say, knowing what we're going to say, thinking about it beforehand, and I guess articulating what the point of our message is, I suppose. And yeah, I saw that and I was like, can I be any more annoyed of what I've just seen? Just because I was just like, well, all right, fair enough, don't like us. Whatever, I don't know, it annoyed me a lot. So yeah, I do script the beginning at times, but other than that, yeah, no scripting. What's the point? Where have I got this time? It's amazing, really. I'm spending it all, of course, on FPL Twitter. Anyway.
So yeah, I've been scripted to say that makes sense there, Tom. What we're going to be talking about today, Tom, I know off the back of sort of my post on Twitter, we're going to be focusing mostly on big at the back and, sort of the defensive strategy, where it's going wrong, maybe the root cause of what's going wrong and what to do in the future. So, of course, we're going to do some weekly features, probably not going to do a league update because the Villa West Ham game is actually still ongoing, and we'll be answering some of the various questions that we've received this game week.
Cool. Thanks for all the questions this week. Got an absolute pile of them yet again, and we'll go through some of the more personal ones, but really sorry if we don't get around to you. Cool. So let's start with the game week reviews. I'm guessing we both want to go over these pretty damn quickly. Nick, how'd you do this game week?
Yeah, I got 50 points. It's not particularly good. It's a red arrow for me in the end. I mean, it was a green after Saturday. We have the likes of sort of Cantwell and Pookie being surprise deliverers of points, and also Mason Mount, but Sterling blanked again. KDB didn't even start, and Luca Dean decided on Sunday to contribute a big fat zero to my team. But I guess to pivot onto the theme of the game week, my defence overall, I got 5 points from four, which was just unbelievably terrible. And just watching all these free scoring forwards as well, which continued on Sunday with the likes of Wilson King and Aubameyang, wasn't great for a team that's sort of set up with just the one sole man up front. I think the third striker definitely isn't dead right now. He's alive and thriving and mocking me. How about yourself?
Yeah, I didn't do particularly well this week. I got 41. Again, the big at the back sort of setup, Robertson and TAA, 7 points between them with an assist for Robertson. That could easily have been so much more. Luca Dean managed to get nothing on Sunday. In fact, I got 1 point from two players on Sunday to quote-unquote save my game week. Danny Ceballos and Dean, 1 point between them. Yeah, very depressing. As it was, only Mo Salah and Timu Pukki actually did anything for me apart from that Robertson assist. So yeah, 41 points overall. Not particularly good. And the wheels have been set in motion for me. Exclusive reveal that I'm looking to wildcard this Friday. So after the FNF and after the game reopens, I'll be hitting the wildcard bus. let's get to the main topic then, I think. And it's about Big at the Back, isn't it? Worth talking about because I think it's something that you coined, actually. We've looked at a few sources. We looked at a few things. I know that Ben McNair did an article a little while ago, I think 2015, on the case for the defence and FFS. But I think the article you wrote back in 2017 was the first use of that kind of Big at the Back idea, as far as we know. I really apologise if you came out of it somewhere else and we completely ignored you.
Yeah, I think when we first started the podcast, I was kind of looking at, if I remember rightly, what was going wrong with my FPL strategy. I looked at Tom, and Tom was always doing very well in FPL, and I was doing very poorly. And mostly as my sort of, you know, I was a bit more of a casual, really, to be honest, before we started the pod. I didn't look at the data and analyse it in the same way that I do every day, virtually now. I used to be a bit more kind of just like, lazy fair with my transfers. I always kind of focused on the attacking players up front. I wasn't really too bothered about my defenders. And I would see players in Tom's team that would constantly score goals. And I was looking at the defensive picks that he had, like Craig Dawson. I was like, who's this guy? I've never even heard of him. He's always seems to rock up with goals. And how's Tom even noticing that? And of course, Tom was focusing on looking at the attacking stats for those defenders, as well, of course, targeting players that would get clean sheets from some of the Tom team. So I really noticed it. Defence was an area of my sort of FPL team that needed vast improvement and was the weakest area, always sort of scoring the lowest points. And I did a little bit of analysis of the defenders actually over that summer. And, you know, some of these defenders have done ridiculously well considering how cheap they were. And yeah, so we sort of looked at whether it was time to go big at the back, so to speak. And it was mostly the Chelsea boys actually that season that had done especially well. It was sort of the eight out of the top 10, six out of the sort of top 10 best value players that season had been defenders, and Cahill being sort of the second best value player of the season, sort of getting 29.67 points per value, and the likes of Alonso, Aspilicueta all up there as well, as well as good old Gareth McCauley, one of our
friends.
What a hero he is. And you know, also the likes of Kyle Walker as well. And we looked at this and we thought, actually, you know what, like, you can load up on these guys, just go top back heavy, just load up and premium expensive defenders, and you can build quite a strong team about that. So that's a little bit of the sort of the history of Big at the Back. But I guess we kind of need to define what Big at the Back is as well, don't we? Because there's been various variations of what it exactly means. I don't know if you want to chime in here, Tom, with what you think your definition is.
Yeah, I think simply put, it's not the extreme of saying, right, I'm going to go with 5-6 million plus defenders. It can be that. It's like degrees, but actually all Big at the Back is reallocating some of the resource that you'd normally kind of funnel to your front line a bit backwards. Because, you know, as we've remarked several times in the past, it was all about those strikers, all about those midfielders, and the defence was kind of an afterthought. And what Big at the Back was for me was the idea of putting an extra million, an extra 2 million, buying an extra premium or two at the back, which we'd never really have done before. And that's what it was to me, like a degree of movement backwards, not saying, right, you need to have 5 huge defenders. I don't think we've ever said that. Plausible deniability there. Is that the same for you?
Yeah, exactly. So I've referred to myself as going big at the back, but I've never actually lined up specifically with a 5-man defence. My fifth defender has always been some sort of like 4.0 million enabler. Obviously, we had the brilliant Aaron Wan-Bissaka last season, and I might have played 5, you know, once or twice last season, but I never really loaded up on 5 premium players. I think that's sort of, that is playing big at the back, but I think that's sort of the more extreme side of big at the back. However, I would also say that having a 3-man defence of 3 premiums isn't quite big at the back either. I feel like the middle ground more is towards that sort of 4-man defence where you've got perhaps 3 quite expensive defenders. You're sort of throwing all your budget into the likes of the most expensive defenders you can get. And then right now that would be like Robbo and TAA, as well as sort of, you know, a character like Luca Dean in there as well, maybe a Manchester City defender.
Yeah, no, I think that's about right with those sort of 4. And I guess fast forward to now, like the work we did over the last summer, again, backed up this point that the defence was a source of fantastic value. And of course, over the last 5 game weeks, things have really taken a turn for the worse in that regard, from the very throaty sort of application we were giving to Big at the Back in the beginning. I know this week, for example, there have been a few podcasts that have spoken about this. So, you know, James and Search and Planet FPL were talking about that. They've both got a very, very strong defence, but they've both got a triple Liverpool defence, for example, and they're both sticking to their guns on that. It was really interesting to hear them compared to like always choosing Josh and Brandon basically saying divest. It's all about basically having TAA and maybe Luka Dean if you can. But the big question, I guess, from where we are now is from our mate Marco Arlotti, who asked, should we be moving funds up top to a three-man forward line away from the premium defenders? And I think that was what your thread was about this week, wasn't it? Because like you basically detailed what had happened over the first five. And I guess the first thing to speak about is the changing of the guard up front, because really the creation of more options in that kind of striker bracket suddenly meant that last year's death of the third striker, which was much pilloried, but actually turned out to be correct with Jimenez the only man who provided any value, that has now changed, hasn't it? And there are now a plethora of viable third striker, second striker options, which we've got lots of questions on too.
Yeah, exactly. So I think last season I mentioned in the thread the likes of Lukaku was leading the line at Manchester United and not getting too much game time. You also had sort of Morata being sort of the sort of £9 million pound forward for Chelsea that just couldn't score at all, and he was later replaced by Higuain, which was another really expensive forward that couldn't do much at all. And it was the same at the lower reaches clubs as well. You know, the likes of Huddersfield and Cardiff just didn't really have any forwards at all that would get any goals, any points at all, completely pointless. I used to compare the Watford players and say, right, would you really want to spend sort of 6.5 million on the likes of Troy Deeney, 6.5 million on the likes of Andre Gray, when you can afford Marcus Alonso for that same price, when you can afford, you know, the likes of Benjamin Mendy and Kieran Trippier, these quite exciting attacking fullbacks that would get you assists and clean sheets as well. Or, you know, this kind of player that would sort of turn up with a goal perhaps once in every 4 or 5 game weeks. And so that was kind of the state of play last season. There really weren't many forwards in the game at all. But as we said, there's been a changing of the guard. And especially with Chelsea, they've got a sort of a young, vibrant £7 million at the start of the season forward who's just absolutely smashing it. In Manchester United, Marcus Rashford's now that nailed-on forward-type character who's taking penalties and very good value as well. He's not a premium asset, so to speak. He's very affordable for us. And then, yeah, the Championship clubs have had these, you know, brilliant players like Teemu Pukki coming up and joining the ranks and scoring week in, week out, just absolutely smashing it. And you think about who we lost and who we've brought in terms of the Championship clubs. We've even got, you know, the likes of Wesley and other players like Sebastian Haller joining the Premier League as well. It's definitely been a changing of guard. And we've got a plethora of options now, haven't we, to play around within that forward line.
Yeah, exactly. From moving from Kenneth Zahor to Teemu Pukki is such an upgrade, isn't it, really? And although it's a bit of a moot point, there are a few kind of little bits and pieces in the strikers which are of interest if you look at the numbers. So did you know, for example, that Tammy's scored 7 goals so far, but his XG is 2.66. So that's an overperformance of almost 4.5 goals. Aguero, 7 goals scored, 3.76 XG, an overperformance of 3.25 goals. And Pukki, 2.3 XG, 6 goals scored, and almost 4 goals overperformed, basically, which is quite amazing, really. But the fact is that, you know, the points mean prizes, effectively. And the fact is we can't really ignore the fact that there are so many strikers. I mean, we haven't even mentioned the Barnes train, for example. There are so many options out there at the moment in those forward lines, and it begins to look like, well, who goes? Where does the money go? Well, upgrading someone like, you know, a Greenwood or a Connor Wickham, and downgrading one of the defenders, like, looks the way to go given the last 5 weeks. I mean, we'll mention a few of the strikers later on in more detail as in answer to a question, but I think what's interesting to move on to is the next part of what your thread was, which is about the defensive failures.
Yeah, so obviously, I think with Liverpool, we're obviously all very disappointed, and like the vast majority of us have at least one Liverpool defender. Me and Tom, for our sins, have a double Liverpool defence, and we've all been very disappointed that they've only managed 1 clean sheet out of 5. And I feel like just a couple more clean sheets, we'd all be laughing our way to the banks and have, you know, much better ranks than we currently do. But unfortunately, it hasn't worked out for Liverpool. Double defence or even triple defence, and I know a lot of listeners also have. And with the fixture shift that's approaching, it is a little bit concerning for us, but there have been mitigating factors as to why Liverpool have not kept any clean sheets. One, they've been quite unlucky, to be honest. I think it's one factor to say. They've never conceded more than 2 goals in any of their games. It's always just been the solitary goal that they've conceded. And there's been some unfortunate circumstances behind those goals, but I think the main factor is obviously they lost a goalkeeper in the first 20 minutes or so of the first game of the season, and that was a massive blow, because Adrian is not the same level of keeper as Alisson, and as we saw, he was directly at fault for the goal that Danny Ings scored in game week two, unfortunately. So that's one factor, and I think the same accounts for Manchester City as well. I think Laporte played more minutes than any other outfield player last season for Manchester City. He was absolutely integral to their back line and the success that they managed, keeping those 20 clean sheets that they managed last season. And unfortunately, with that injury, we saw that Otamendi and Stones, they're just not the same level of skill as Laporte. And they played absolutely horrendously defensively against Norwich in that last game week, as we all saw from Otamendi's terrible ball management when he gave the ball away for the
bad, wasn't it?
We were all thinking about bringing this guy in, and now we're all like, no, don't even go near him, we can't even touch this guy because he's terrible. And it is a little bit concerning. Obviously, both Manchester City and Liverpool both lost two key members to their defence, and it really has shown in the game so far.
Yeah, certainly. I saw there was a stat on Sky just earlier on that the Stones-Otamendi partnership on average has conceded over one goal a game compared to every other partnership, which is less than one goal per game. So yeah, it's a real worry for people who are holding Man City's defensive assets there. And I did have a look at some of the numbers as well behind what's been going on. And I've looked at the kind of the past 3 years, and it does seem that the first five has been a bit of a particularly defensively poor performance in the light of the last 2 years. I didn't go any further back because one time, and two, by that time you're going that far back, things have changed so much, haven't they? Just to start with clean sheets, this year so far, there's been 21 clean sheets, less whatever the hell happens tonight with Villa and West Ham. Year before, 23 clean sheets by this point. Liverpool had kept three of them, actually. And in 2017-18, a mammoth 39 clean sheets have been kept at this point. United had four, and the likes of Huddersfield, City, Saints, Swansea, Spurs, Watford and WBA had all kept three. You can see the depreciation defensive quality that seems to be going on. Maybe that's the tailwind of a very, very strong attacks, as we've been mentioning. Maybe with the removal of Huddersfield and Cardiff, for example. They've been replaced by more offensive teams, and that's had a particular bit of an impact. You can see this as well in things like big chances conceded. Just to look at Liverpool and City, for example. 2018-19 at this point, Liverpool conceded two big chances. At this time now, Liverpool conceded eight big chances. So they've quadrupled the amount of big chances that they've conceded, which I think is down, as you say, to the personnel. A really telling stat here is defensive errors, the one of the less looked at stats, which shows that in the past couple of years that I mentioned, City and Liverpool have been pretty tight at the back. And they've both, by this point, game week five and game week seven in 2017-18 and 2018-19, they both only made two defensive errors. Sorry, Liverpool made one actually in 2017-18, but one to two defensive errors. This year, Man City have made four defensive errors, so they've doubled the defensive errors that they've made, and one error has been leading to goal, obviously Otamendi. But this year, Liverpool have made six defensive errors, one leading to goal, which is Adrian. So they've tripled again the errors they've been making. I think those sorts of numbers do show that there is an element of luck involved, but also with the concession of the big chances, it's a depreciation in defensive solidity, because you've got that kind of the offensive menu which is now available to us as FPL managers, which is actually quite an exciting time, because obviously one of the counterpoints to big at the back is, as Adam said when he was on the pod last week, it can be a bit nerve-wracking waiting for loads of clean sheets to come through, right? So you want those strikers from a fun perspective, and there's definitely some sort of element of that there in the numbers you can see.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree with you there. I mean, yeah, exactly. That's a very good point. And I think FPO_Chris, he responded to my thread with some interesting statistics in terms of the sort of the volumes of clean sheets that we've had so far this season, and how low it is in comparison to literally since 2002, 2003. So essentially, we're sort of 20.5% amount of clean sheets so far this season, and the lowest since 2002-2003 I think is about 25.1%, and typically it ranges over the course of the season between sort of 27 to 30% clean sheets a year. So we're performing well below the mean of clean sheets, and so it's no surprise really that the defenders are struggling when literally hardly any teams at all are keeping the clean sheets. But part of the reason behind the big at the back concept is, and it's not just about the clean sheets for these defenders, it's about the attacking returns as well. And that's why we like these defenders. I mean, the likes of Trent Alexander-Arnold. Unfortunately, he did only get 2 points this week, but he created like 11 chances in total, which was, I think, second only to Deu Lefeu or something over the course of the game week. So this guy is creating tons of chances. There's definitely opportunity for attack in return. We've both got Trent and we've both got Luca Dean, and they're taking all the sort of set pieces for their teams as well. So there's definitely opportunity for these guys who are constantly bombing forward. They're up in the wing. They're spending half their game virtually in the opposing half in the penalty box and stuff. So there's plenty of opportunity, even if those clean sheets go. I always look at the likes of Trent Alexander-Arnold and think, actually, I may have lost a clean sheet. There's still 10 minutes to go. You could definitely nab an assist, and he can definitely get me some points. And I think Luca Dean did that the other game week with a very last-minute assist.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
A couple of points. So I do get obviously annoyed with Liverpool because I was doubled up, but I always think, actually, you know, there is an opportunity here still to grab a return. And that's what I really like about these defenders. I don't just have them for the clean sheets. I've got them for the attacking returns as well. And essentially, the clean sheet is an added bonus, if you think about it in a funny sort of way, because you can get your goal, you can get 6 points for a goal, ridiculous. You can get 3 points for an assist. You can, if they get a clean sheet, they invariably always pick up bonus as well because they're creating so many chances. So they always perform very well in terms of the BPS metric. So there are so many different ways for these players to get you points more than any other player. And that's what I like them really, as well as their sort of kindly price. As we said, none of them are more expensive than £7 million. So, you know, it's about the same price as a cheap forward or a mid-priced mid, isn't it, really?
No, certainly. And what's telling, actually, is in the much-neglected ICT index, there's only two defenders in the top 20 who are TAA in 9th and Dean in 15th. Last year at this point, there were absolutely no defenders. In 2017-18, there was our man Ben Davis in 17th and Alonso in 20th. But you're completely right about the absence of clean sheets impacting defenders, and I think this point's been made a few times, but Nick, there's one defender currently in the top 20 in FPL in terms of points scored overall. Who is that?
Yannick Vestergaard.
It is indeed the burly Southampton defender. So one man, one defender this year in the top 20. Last year there were four in the top 20 after five game weeks. Alonso 46, Hollabas and Robertson were both on 34, and Mendy with 32. Alonso would be the second highest scoring player overall so far if he'd have done that this year. 2017-18, as mentioned, there were a lot of clean sheets at the start. Man United particularly were on a bit of a madness then. There were six defenders in the top 20 after five game weeks. That's Valencia on 36, Bailly, Babies, and the likes of Hagazzi, Lascelles and Alonso were all there. So I guess this year it really has not gone the defender's way. And I think we touched on it a little bit then, and you mentioned kind of the game that we witnessed this weekend for Liverpool against Newcastle. And the next part of your thread obviously was that luck can have a bit of an impact here. And I don't think, we're not ascribing the fact that this hasn't really worked out so far to it being purely bad luck. And you know, people like FPL Chef have done very, very well through creating a team which is very, very attack heavy and going for the retro 3-4-3, which I think I'll be looking at with my wild card. But you know, this week, for example, TAA, Robbo both had big chances in the game. TAA created seven chances in that game. Like how he didn't return and how Robertson didn't return more than he did is just incredible, really. And plus, add some bad luck in with Adrian's mistakes and things like that, Otamendi's mistakes, and you've got a bit of a recipe for big at the back to look a bit shaky, haven't you, Nick?
Yeah, exactly. As I said, Liverpool have conceded in four of these five games, but some of those goals were pretty damn lucky, to be honest. They're very unfortunate, obviously. Yeah. One example, sort of Jethro Willem's goal on Saturday was an absolute sort of amazing goal. Sort of came out of nowhere, and it was very unfortunate. Nothing Liverpool could have done about that particular goal. And I think it's the same against sort of Harry Wilson free kick. It's an absolutely fantastic free kick that he delivered in that game as well. So I think you know, we try and say, actually, oh, a theory's not worked because of luck. We're not trying to say that at all. That's not what we're trying to say. Oh, it's just been luck that this hasn't worked out. But there, it has to be considered as one of the factors why things perhaps haven't gone the way of, as we sort of planned at the beginning of the pre-season. We talked about it, obviously, and things haven't worked out. There's been the injuries. There's been these amazing goals. There's been these ridiculous mistakes by the defenders that we would not expect them to make. But I think you have to have an degree of adaptability to these strategies as well. And if things aren't working out, you have to make sure that, you know, we're not going to say, right, we're rigidly sticking with this. This is the case. It's just luck. We're not certainly saying that at all. I think you do need to kind of be malleable and sort of be willing to change when things perhaps aren't working out. And as we said, there's been a changing of the guard as well with the forwards. I definitely feel like at this moment in time, I need to start pivoting my team back towards sort of a more forwards heavy team. And at the moment, I've just got the one man in Teemu Pukia. It definitely doesn't feel enough with all the sort of the top scorers in the game being forwards at the moment. I need to definitely think about a second forward. But at the moment, I think in terms of my personal team, I'm probably going to roll it for now, I think, and not get Tammy in for the Liverpool game. He feels like one of the sort of a player that's a flat track bully. I think someone highlighted that Tammy's only scored this season against teams that have been promoted in the last year and a half, and it's a fair cop. We know Tammy can smash it against in the championship against championship level teams, but can he sort of deliver against clubs like Liverpool?
Yeah, so yeah, I'm leaving it till Friday till I buy him, so I really hope he doesn't rise. But as you said, you've got to be malleable and you've got to be able to just look at things and realise when we're not really working. Like the killer for me really is the XGC stats. So Liverpool and Man City at this time last year were the lowest for XGC. Man City 3.16, Liverpool 3.73. This year that's risen to 5 goals that Liverpool would have conceded according to the expected stats, and almost 6, 5.77 for City. So as I mentioned earlier on, there's been a bit of a depreciation in the defenders, and it's hard to see where the clean sheets are going to come from, whereas on the other side of it, in this kind of high goal scoring sort of scenario, you've got a lot of strikers currently at it. And yeah, I'm the same with you that I think you're going to have to perhaps look at your teams and think, well, how am I going to react to this if you haven't already? And I'm going to be reacting to it, I think, just because if that's the way the season goes, like, you've got to be able to think, right, okay, this was my idea. Get over the sunk cost fallacy. Yeah, we spent a lot of time thinking about big at the back and arguing for it. But if the data doesn't support it anymore, you can't get into that cycle of going, it's going to come back, it's going to work. Like, there are certainly times this weekend where I kind of thought, yeah, I think I've probably seen enough here. And the final thing on your threads, just to talk about quickly, is the kind of the 4.5 and 5 million like bargain bucket defenders which are around. You said that they're definitely going to have a role to play.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's been, as you mentioned, some unlikely picks so far that have been delivering, the likes of Yannick Vestergaard in the Southampton defence. We've also seen Eric Peters turn up again after a year sabbatical in the Championship and start performing above expectations in terms of points for value. And I definitely think that, you know, we can talk about these 4.5 million defenders, and also, of course, John Lundstrom at Sheffield United, who's currently 4.2, who's been doing very well and sort of developing a bit of a cult following in FPL, so to speak. Lots of people loving the Lundstrom, who's sort of out of position, sort of defensive asset. And I definitely think these players can have a role to play. And it's all about sort of trying to find those bargains in there. You know, likes of Soyuncu, for instance, Leicester, sort of playing very well and only 4.5. I've always sort of talked about Lewis Dunk as well at Brighton, who's a very cheap defensive asset as well. And yeah, these players can be very good value. But of course, you essentially are paying for something a little bit less than the premium assets. It does give you a little bit more flexibility to spend on your midfield and attack. But you're not going to be guaranteed clean sheets from these players, unfortunately. It can be a little bit up and down and a little bit of a gamble to actually predict who's going to do well and who's going to not do well. I don't think anyone would have put, you know, had sort of fantastic odds if you put a bet on sort of Vestergaard, Peters and Lundstrom being the sort of top value defensive options at this point of the season, I think.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the one thing to remember is if you are going for these 4.5 guys, is that they don't come with that level of guarantee of points over the long term. And if you look at the quote-unquote analog stats, unsurprising who's dominating them, like chances created, it's TAA and Dean at the top. And in for attempts at goal, it's Dean, Alexander-Arnold and Robertson at the top. So these are players who are going to return over the course of the season. They haven't at the moment, they haven't yet, and there are better options, or on paper options, who are returning at the moment in other positions, which may make you rethink again those resources. But you have to bear in mind the players you're bringing in, they are the sorts of players that you are going to have in, they are going to let you down, but that's what they're costed for. And it's just when those more expensive players are letting you down as well, when you probably have a bit more of an issue. I guess that kind of brings us to rounding off this this little bit, Nick. And I guess the central perk of having these defenders is that you can downgrade them and redistribute the money. So what are you thinking of doing with these guys going forward? Like, you guys can probably guess that what my wildcard is going to look like, but I haven't heard that you've had any plans to wildcard, unless you're kind of keeping it quiet from me, Nick. But you said at the end of your thread that you were still pretty confident about big at the back, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm confident about the premium defenders. I may be pivoting, as I said, to a sort of a 3-5-2, I think, at the moment. I do like the way the role that Cantwell is playing in my team at the moment, sort of the fifth midfielder that seems to be very much performing above expectations, and have a sort of very good value pick, as we said. But I think with Van Dijk and Zinchenko, I think one of them will be downgraded to a cheaper option. And I've got a little bit of cash in the bank. And as I said, I think my bench at the moment is absolutely terrible. I do have Rico, who sort of got 5 points from the bench, which is the same as the rest of the defence put together. Oh. But I've also got Connor Wickham and Mason Greenwood doing absolutely nothing. So I think Wickham will have to go because he's injured as well. And be upgraded to the likes of Tammy Abraham. And it gives me a little bit of flexibility to switch around as well to other options if necessary, like Haller and stuff.
I can see where you're coming from and why you are where you are. Like, having a phase sort of approach probably sounds like it would fit your situation at the moment. For me, I just want that 7 in the front line. I think that'll be what I'm doing from the deadline onwards to try to put out a great front 7 come game week 7. Okay, let's take a break there, Nick, and move on to the features.
Who got the assist?
Hello, so we're back and we're going to go into the feature section now. This is our weekly staple of different things that we speak about: market forces, the over 30s, the Nick pick versus the Tom pick, the zombies, and of course, Dad Watch. I think we are going to have another instalment today, are we, Nick?
Yep, we'll be catching up with what my dad's been up to this game week on the mountains of Alsace, yeah.
Excellent, cool. All right, let's start with the market forces then. This is where we observe the market's reaction to the game we've just gone, looking at the movers and shakers and figuring out why that may possibly be. Nick, the man across the numbers, I know that the game week's still ongoing, but so far, what are the early signs?
So yeah, a lot of activity as usual in the market, lots of early movers, lots of excitement. Building for Tammy Abraham, obviously, perhaps not surprisingly at all, this is the most transferred in player at this moment. Despite the Liverpool fixture, he's had over 360,000 transfers in. And as we said, he's got 7 goals in 3 games. He looks very exciting. Looks like he's setting in very well in terms of that leading man at Chelsea, and at number 9 jerseys, definitely his right now. So I think it's no surprise that Abraham's being heavily bought, but he's got Pookie on his tail still. As we saw last week, lots of people selling Pookie after just one blank. And even though they had Manchester City before, why are people selling this guy? He's had a sort of smashing start to the season. And a lot of people punished by selling Pookie because, of course, he got 12 points against Manchester City, unbelievably. And he's had over 215,000 transfers in at time of recording. But Tom, there's a couple of forwards being sold. Jimenez is the most transferred out player with over 100,000 transfers out. We all loved Jimenez last season. He was brilliant. He was brilliant in a very dead field in terms of that forward line. There weren't really anyone competing with Jimenez in terms of value and goals. But this season, he's only got the 2 goals. And in the era of forwards, that's just not enough for managers, is it? And it's the same also with your Barnes train, Tom, I'm afraid. 87,000 transfers out. The train seems to be a little bit derailed right now after a couple of blanks. I think it was just as soon as you got on, wasn't it, that he started blanking?
Basically. And to complete the 3 divorces of forwards in the sales, it's Harry Kane, been sold by 85,000. Obviously got an assist this week, but given 11 million's worth of price, that's not really enough for people to keep hold. Also rising this week, it's my cousin Todd Cantle. I'm one of the 178,000 managers so far who have bought in the utility man. yeah, 21.5% ownership now after another goal, his second of the season, and with a decent run actually coming up for them. I think that I can see why people are doing it, and I did it basically because he fits into any wild card I was going to get. He was rising, didn't want Ndonka anymore, and needed a kind of 11th man. So I'm one of these people that have brought him in. And Son Heung-min, after a brace, obviously very, very low ownership, one of those players that I tipped actually as one of my Tom picks a couple of weeks ago, ahead of my time. And announced himself again on the season, 16 pointer against Crystal Palace, and not particularly surprising, but I'm guessing some allowances need to be made for that, and I'm surprised by who is getting the bullet.
Yeah, I think there's no surprise, obviously, Smiley Son being bought after brace. He also got an assist in the Arsenal game, and Spurs have some decent fixtures actually coming up with Leicester, Southampton, Brighton and Watford up next. But yeah, it's Raheem that's being sold. 75,000 transfers out already for Raheem Sterling at the time of recording. And obviously, he had 5 goals in the first 3 games of the season, hat-trick in the opening game, a 5-0 mauling of West Ham. But that feels so long ago in terms of FPL. We've all forgotten about that. All we can think about are his back-to-back blanks against Brighton and Norwich. And despite the Watford at home fixture, a lot of people setting him. That feels a bit dangerous, especially with that sort of tasty home match against Watford. And I'm sure you're probably thinking about captaining him again, aren't you, Tom?
Yeah, I think so. We'll talk about it later on, the transfers and captains, but I find it, again, very hard to see past captaining him. So once more into the breach, dear friends, once more on Sterling. Cool. All right. Let's move on then to the over 30s. This is a team that Nick and I have put together based on the fact that we've hit that milestone and wants to make sure that the old dogs have still got some relevance in fantasy football. This week, they did all right. 46 points with a -4. Bought in Sigurdsson. This is his birthday. And I was also alerted to the fact that Matt Lowton at Burnley is 32. So my first fan member bought him in. However, it didn't work out particularly well. Lloris at the back with a clean sheet and a couple and 6 saves, got 8 points. Captain Aguero returned with the goal. But apart from that, it was kind of slim pickings. Aubameyang with the first team really carrying the team to that 46. They're currently ranked 1.7 million, so no great shakes. But again, the team's in pretty good state, actually, ahead of next week. Captain Aguero again, I'm sure. Maybe we'll give it to Aubameyang, I don't know. I think overall that the prospects are looking fairly good for the over 30s, especially with Siggy in now to beef up that midfield, which was being held together by David Silva and Mark Noble.
Yeah, they're doing okay, aren't they, the over 30s? I think they're relying quite heavily on that forward line, as you said, likes for Aubameyang and Aguero gathering the points. But yeah, talking about someone else who's over 30, it's this time for Dad Watch. And yeah, just to give a little bit of explanation, I'm sure most of you know already, but basically my dad set up a proper team for the first time ever in FPL with a little bit of guidance, but a lot of just sort of initiative and then bringing in players that he recognised, and did ridiculously well after 2 game weeks. It was sort of 3K in the world. I was like, how's he reached these heights that I've essentially never reached in my FPL career? So we thought we'd introduce a little bit of a feature to just sort of track him over the course of the season, see how he gets on. And yeah, since sort of reaching the 3K in game week 2, it's been a little bit of a downward trajectory, unfortunately, for my dad. But he's still kind of doing relatively okay in terms of overall rank. He dropped 10K overall rank this game week down to 131k with a sort of a total return of 53 points. Sort of Cantwell and Pukki doing the business for him, as well as Rashford and Sadio Mane. But having problems with the defence as well this game week, and particularly made a particularly bad transfer, which we talked about on the last pod, and I advised him against, which was sort of fiddling around and rotating the goalkeeper. And I said, don't do that. And he did it right at the beginning of the week as well. I told him about the perils of overmanagement and not getting overly fussed about who's in your team and what you're doing. But didn't listen to the advice, did he, Tom? Bad times for Ian, as he swapped out De Gea for Ederson, which was an 8-point swing in terms of
points.
He'd be sitting very pretty on a 61-pointer this game week, but because of that transfer, it was only 53 points and a slight red arrow, unfortunately, for him.
Still did better than me, though.
Yeah, I mean, you said to me, I'm fine. But I said, are you sure you're fine? I just said, enjoy your holiday. Enjoy the Alsace, and I'll see you when you get home.
Has he tinkered at all this week so far?
Not as far as I know.
Okay. Right, remind him there's a Friday night deadline, though. Cool. All right. And moving on to the Nick pick versus the Tom pick. This is where we give a couple of picks based on our personalities. So Nick, a bit more of a small-c conservative, straightforward sort of pick who's going to score you points. And for me, a bit of a mad scientist sort of pick who may score you great points or may very well blank. And I'd actually forgotten who it was because we were on an international break. But I listened back to the old pod with Adam and I found out that Nick, you'd chosen Aubameyang. So yeah, 13 points, congratulations. And crystallizing what I was saying about my sort of pick, I chose Riyad Mahrez, who got 1 point against Norwich in that horror show for Manchester City. So Nick, who is your straightforward pick this week?
So Tom, for my pick this week, I thought I'd go for Callum Wilson. Actually, I feel like he's really hitting his stride in terms of goals now in the Premier League. He needs to be a part of the conversation in terms of those attacking forwards that are out there with sort of 3 goals and 3 assists to his name so far in 5 game weeks. He's already on 33 points. And I feel like even though Southampton have been a little bit more defensively resolute this season compared to last season, I feel like there could be more goals for Callum in the Friday night game. He's actually delivered in every game so far this season. I feel like he's going to continue that brain of form. And he certainly needs to be in terms of the conversations being held with the forward. We didn't cover him in great detail earlier on in the pod, but I feel like he's certainly... one to shout about.
Yeah, certainly. He's due to come in for me, I think, on my wild card at the moment as I go for the poor front line, the PAW of Pookie, Abraham and Wilson. So yeah, no, I'm behind that. My Tom pick this week actually is in the same game as Gineppo at Southampton. So I saw him play. He looked like there's something about him. Really nice goal this week. And I feel like in that kind of troublesome, cheap midfielder slot, anybody to keep an eye on is interesting. It's like he's got a little bit of flair about him. Looks like he's got the ability to make the difference. This is all I've got because I didn't look into him because he was in the Belgian league, and the TLDR of that was he was in the Belgian league. But yeah, interested to see how he goes. And I think that Bournemouth defence may be right for him to get another. So yeah, that's how that one goes. And the final thing this week is the Zombies. Again, we're not going to be updating the Zombie League just because of the time of the recording. I want to give a big shout out to Eric Amundsen for messaging us with a few more cheaters who will be removed from the Zombie League in due course. So Nick, how did your Zombies do this week?
It's sort of a very much dead week for them again. Sort of just 51 points. They seem to be sort of mirroring my main team over the course of the season. But a couple of people showed up that have done absolutely nothing up till now with a few points, which is nice to see. Ryan Fraser and Miamba Tonyan sort of finally appearing with some points. And he got a 5 point. 5 points this game week, so yeah, good to see those guys return, as well as Andrew Robertson getting a 5 and then Marcus Rashford a 9. But yeah, nothing particularly exciting to talk about in terms of my Zombies this game week.
Yeah, is that the same for me? I seem to be mimicking again my main team in that they're about kind of 5 or 10 points off you every game week somehow. So my guys have ended up on 46, and that Laporte injury is absolutely huge for them, unfortunately, because it means that Lise Moussey comes off the bench probably for the next 6 months to give me 1 point, which he's done this week. Captain Salah obviously got the goal. Josh King with a welcome pair of assists, but other than that, not very much in the 45. I'm really hoping that Nicola Pepe, who's my main sort of punt in that particular setup, begins to do something very soon. As it stands, actually, they're not actually that far off me, my main team. I'm 7 points ahead of them, so things are getting a bit dicey, and I'm really hoping that I'm able to accelerate away from them, hopefully powered by that wild card when it comes around to it. All right, let's take a break there and move on to the questions.
Who got the assist?
So we're back, and we're not going to do a Who Got the Assist mini league update this game week because the game week is actually still ongoing, but we'll try and give a proper update next week, so apologies for that. But yeah, I can see a few guys doing very well. Likes of Anasa Khalidi had a very good game week this game week, and sort of 85 points now up to overall rank 12, which is pretty damn impressive. So well done, Anas, and then well done to all the other guys that are doing well in the mini league right now. And we're also on Love Sport Radio every game week. So check us out. It's typically around sort of 6 p.m. on a Friday. So this game week, Tom will. This game week, I'll be appearing just before the Southampton Bournemouth game to give my thoughts. And I know you were on it last game week, weren't you, as well, Tom?
Yeah, always good to go on with Johnny and Ewan if we can. Obviously getting a bit of banter at the moment, so I'm really hoping that we're able to take that on, because the producer is one of these guys who's just done really, really well. The sort of thing where he didn't have Sterling or didn't have Aguero the other week, so he captained De Bruyne for that great performance, and that's just taking him away. So hopefully we're going to be able to catch up in not very long. Speaking of catching up, I'm going to do an awkward segue there to the questions. And the first question is from our buddy FPL Stag, who asked... I'm not going to do the Irish accent. I was about to launch into it and I thought better of it. What exactly is it about this season compared to others that means I and others can't catch a break? So, and it's definitely something that we've been speaking about, I guess, in terms of big at the back. But with many managers struggling, with lots of deployment of the classic, when can we restart the season? ? Tweet. What do you think has been going on there, Nick, which is really causing many managers to struggle and not be able to get back to where they're used to being?
Well, to be honest, I mean, we've covered a number of the factors at the beginning of the season, but this is not a new occurrence to sort of get these types of questions from people. And I know Stag's obviously a sort of one of those top managers. He did absolutely fantastically last season. You know, I remember he was right at the top of our mini league right at the end of the season. But there's always a few top managers always sort of doing badly. And yeah, I think it's just a sort of a myriad of factors. You can't really pin it down to one thing, but often it can be, you know, unfortunate picks, a bit of bad luck here and there, a couple of wrong captaincy options, a couple of defenders that haven't kept clean sheets, and all of a sudden you find yourself lurking quite low down the ranks. And I think Stag should not worry. I think it's obviously very early in the season. I know he's struggling a little bit in terms of his OR, but I definitely know that he'll catch up with the rest of us and certainly be up there and competing right at the top of the end of the season. So I think my advice would be to not overly panic. Just, keep doing what you're doing. Keep trying to follow, you know, the analysis and you know, looking at the players that are good, etc. And the improvement will definitely come in the long run.
Yeah, exactly. I think when people do look at their ranks and it's not as good as it can be, you've got a sense of danger, don't you? Your Inagi senses start tingling. But I think a lot of it is due to the failure of the big at the back and, well, so far anyway, Nick, before you get angry there. But I think you touched on it a second ago, is captaincy. It's absolutely huge. The fact that that hasn't really worked out thus far has been a bit underrated, I think, in the clamour to discredit you. A pair of Sterling blanks against Brighton at home and Norwich away. I think that's been a huge factor in many people not doing particularly well when those who captain Salah or captain Mane indeed have done very, very well. And I think that looking at it again, I think I'd do the same thing again and captain Sterling for both of those games. And I probably will captain Sterling this week against Watford. But captaincy is such a huge part of FPL, and not landing those... it's absolutely huge. So official FPL, to their credit, have stepped up this year in Twitter, and they started interacting with the community a little bit more. And they retweeted the guy, FPL the Adam, who famously provided me the hold gift the other year, who showed that if you left your captaincy on one of on Salah or Sterling, for example, from the very beginning, you'd be in a much better position than swapping between them. However, like, I don't think that's feasible week to week. Like, looking back again, can you really be angry about the fact that you captained Sterling against Norwich away? Like, I think that you do that every time. It's just the case of these things. Is gambler's fallacy to say it's going to even out? But as Nick says, you can't be thinking, oh my God, my team is terrible, I've got to give up. Like, you've got to just stick with it and do some work to get back. You will get back eventually. It's just landing those captaincies, doing what you're doing. If you're making decisions for the right reasons, if you're making mad calls and it's not paying off after lots of hits, then it's your fault. But if it's something like your captaincy not quite working out, or if it's something like the defenders not getting the rubber, the green, then those are things you've got to wait for, right? And Nick, you've had a bit of some travails as well in this regard with Salah and Sterling, like I have.
Yeah, so I was just looking actually when you mentioned that point about picking the wrong out. Winehouse, Salah and Sterling. I was just going through each game week, and it seems like since the start of the season, I've picked the wrong one out of Salah and Sterling every single game week, which hasn't been great. Obviously, Salah got 12 in the first week when Sterling got his hat-trick for 20 points, and then it's just continued on from there. So I think definitely there is a factor of luck in it, and those captain picks are really critical in terms of success, and maybe there is a case for just keeping it on one of them and sticking perhaps. But yeah, I think going back to the original question, I wouldn't worry too much this moment in time. Just try and enjoy the game, which we all love. And
Oh, it doesn't feel like it at times like this, does it? But yeah, no, we'll get through it. We're all in it together. There are some people who are doing fantastically well, of course, but I'm sure things will eventually even out. Like the cream rises to the top, of course. All right, next question. Are Chelsea the real deal? Jeremy Lewis asked if one of their attacking players, I'm guessing he means by that, Mason Mount or Tammy Abraham, essential inclusions in our squads. And FPL Fox asks, how long can Tammy keep it up? So obviously I mentioned earlier on that he's hugely outperforming, if I can use that word without inciting the Bane crowd, his XG at the moment, and Mason Mount as well doing very well. You're transferring this week for Martial and nicking a last minute goal. You're very happy on the stag about that, weren't you? Both of these young players, both Lampard lads, looking very, very good, and with a great run of fixtures to come from game week 7. So this week with Liverpool, I'm praying that people are going to be leaving them so I can buy them on Friday night and I don't rise any further. But from game week 7 to game week 12, I don't play any teams in the top 6. And indeed, from game week 7 all the way up to game week 17, they only play Man City in game week 13. So, pretty decent run for them. And I wouldn't be surprised to see many people doubling up. Or even, you know, with Tomori seemingly emerging as well as another 4.5 million cheap option at the back, tripling up on Chelsea going forward. So what do we think on Chelsea then, Nick? Are you convinced? I know you're on Mount. Are you looking to add to him? You've mentioned Abraham as well in glowing terms.
Yeah, certainly. I think I really like the Chelsea players, and they've actually got a fantastic run of fixtures coming up as well. I think after the Liverpool game, it's just a sea of green in terms of fixtures. Brighton at home, Southampton away, Newcastle home, Burnley away, Watford away, Crystal Palace at home. I think there's certainly a case for tripling up on them. And the reason you can triple up on Chelsea is because they're so damn cheap as well. Like, I've never imagined a season where like the most expensive Chelsea player currently is only 7.4 million. It's just full of bargains in that Chelsea team. I mean, Mason Mount is just absolutely smashing in. He's only 6.5 million. You've kind of got no excuse really not to try and sort of fit him into your team. I'm sure he's probably going to be in your wildcard team as well, Tom, I'd imagine. And same with Abraham as well. These guys are super cheap. You know, they're super affordable, and they're playing for a team that's doing pretty well. I mean, defensively, they remain quite suspect this season and don't seem like the same sort of defensive force that we've known Chelsea to be over the past few seasons. But going forward, I can see plenty of goals, plenty of excitement, plenty of youth and vigour and a sort of a youthful manager as well. And yeah, I think there's positive vibes generally at Chelsea after that sort of, you know, very dodgy start against Manchester United. I think they're certainly a team that we need to be strongly considering, you know, loading up on, and even definitely after the Liverpool game, considering a potential triple up with the likes of Tomori. Whether he can hold down that position in the team, it remains to be seen. But at the moment, he certainly looks very good, and he sort of scored a belt of a goal, didn't he, as well?
Yeah, certainly. Well, I think he's certainly going to be doing that every week. That was an absolute peach for finish, a goal of the month for that. But Chelsea and the ability to get that double slash triple up in is, it's not the reason on what I'm going to wildcard on Friday. I'm going to use the definitive tone here. There's a small chance I might not, but I almost definitely am. Part of the reason I'm wildcarding is the fact that these guys, because they started off so cheap, like Mount's already risen 0.5, Abe's already risen at 0.3. Come international break too, if I'm still waiting around to buy these guys in, they're going to start to become really unaffordable to fit them into a team. Like at the moment, Mount seems to solve that kind of troublesome fourth midfielder slot perfectly. Abraham is worth putting your money in just because he plays for Chelsea in a Chelsea team which is performing vibrantly. great fixtures and looking absolutely on form. Adam mentioned last week, didn't he, that part of what isn't covered in the stats is being on form and having confidence. And watching Tammy, he certainly has that. Whether he's going to do it against Liverpool, I hope not, because I've got two Liverpool defenders. But if he does that, great, because he's probably going to be in my team come Friday night. I'm not wildcarding to get Chelsea players, but I think having two of them, Mount and Abraham, is probably going to be hygiene before long, isn't it? So, yeah, it's definitely something that I want to get in on. And the beauty, to answer FPL Fox's question of Abraham's price, is that if he doesn't keep it up, then there's a plethora of options that I can remove him for. So, yeah, win-win, really. But if you listen to this and thinking of buying, I just strongly advocate that you don't buy them until next week, just because I've got Liverpool next, and also because I want to preserve the value as it is for my wild card. Yeah? Sorry, we were just discussing Mason Mount there. And the next question is actually on that sort of area. So, as I just said, kind of that fourth midfielder slot is a bit of a pain point for managers, and Mount looks like that one who may be kind of a long-term sort of pick there. But FPL Guidance asks, other than Mount, who's of interest in that mid-price midfielder category? Again, quite a lot of options kind of going around, aren't there, at the moment? But it does look like kind of Mount is in the ascendancy, as Adam mentioned the other week and continued on this week.
Yeah, definitely. I think the first person I've made, perhaps he's not really mid-priced, more sort of lower price, but is Todd Cantle, and obviously he's done very well for Norwich so far, and I think he fits very much in sort of that fifth midfielder category that can come in and play in your team, but bench at your peril, as many found out, unfortunately, this game week. But sort of moving on to sort of a bit more expensive players, but one player that's sort of floating a little bit under the radar actually has done very well is Spursman Eric Lamella. So he's already picked up two goals and two assists so far, and he's started every single game. So it seems like, whilst we've always seen Lamella as sort of, you know, a rotation risk, he's never played more than sort of 2,400 minutes in the course of a season. In the last three seasons, the most he's managed is 965 minutes. This season, it seems like Lamella's fit. He seems like Pop really trusts Lamella to be one of his key midfield assets this season on the right wing. The trust that Pock's put in him seems to have come out in his performances so far, with two goals and two assists. And only 6.1 million is worth highlighting that this guy is. He's not very expensive at all. And I did mention the Spurs fixtures, I think, earlier. But yeah, Leicester, Southampton, Brighton, Watford up next. I think you have to consider him as perhaps as another option as in that sort of fourth midfield bracket.
No, certainly, I understand that. I think Todd Cantle is obviously the guy who is ripping it up. He's actually third for XGI amongst the midfielders at the moment. It's absolutely ridiculous for a 4.5 at the start of the season. Because of him, I think that he's going to obscure another option in that Norwich midfield, who's Buendia. Absolutely brilliant player. I watched him play this weekend, and yeah, absolutely fabulous against Man City. Just broke up the play and created as well, like a real all-rounder. He's currently third for chances created amongst midfielders with 13, and he's always looking for Pukki. Like, those two work together so well, and it's clear to see really when they play together that the potent force that's there and why they got promoted from the Championship, basically. Also in the chance creation stats is Lanzini in second with 14. Now, I'm not really a huge fan of Lanzini, actually. I always kind of think that he's a sort of player who assists the assister and plays a bit deep and takes sort of long shots and gets the occasional worldie. But yeah, I don't think he's going to get anything tonight. Maybe the one that I would mention quickly, perhaps not one for this week coming because they got Spurs, but after that, it's James Maddison, 7.1, 2.55 XGI. So that's fourth month midfielder so far, despite having a bit of a dodgy start. And he's also taken the second most attempts of any midfielder as well. Joint with Mason Mount and Mo Salah on 16. So we know what Maddison can do. We know that Maddison's almost definitely going to be playing every game under Brendan Rodgers, trusted at number 10 position. And once Leicester's fixtures Brighton, I think it could be a really potent differential. So from game week 7 onwards, they've got a really, really nice run. They've got Liverpool in game week 8, which is a bit annoying, but that Newcastle game week 7, followed by Liverpool game in 8. But from 9 till 17, they don't play any team in the top 6 apart from Arsenal in game week 12 at home. that's not particularly going to cause anyone any worry, is it, being at home to Arsenal? So, yeah, I think a 7.1 Maddison could well be one of those players who does enter the template, or does at least enter our thinking. It's just whether the fact that Mason Mount is 0.6 million cheaper and providing what he's providing with great fixtures means that Maddison's probably going to be ignored. But yeah, he'd be the one that I'd be looking at in that sort of mid-price sort of area. Staying with categories, mid-price strikers. Wayne Lee says that with a menu of these players doing well, how the hell do we choose between Pukki, Abraham, Haller, Wilson, Vardy, Barnes, etc., etc.? And David Genford asked, Haller or Abraham, what would you say? Like, I think it's all kind of poking around the same sort of area. Like, how do we even begin to choose between these sorts of options right now?
I think for me, I think the two standout picks remain Abraham and Pukki. I think Pukki is just performing ridiculously well so far. I missed out on all his points in the beginning of the season, but was certainly a member of that Pukki party this game week against Manchester City. And with their next four as well being Burnley, Crystal Palace, Villa and Bournemouth, you almost have to consider Pukki as a potential captaincy option as well. I think he certainly needs to be in the equation when you're thinking about who you're going to captain, with Sterling perhaps not delivering to expectations. But yeah, I think Pukki being the top scorer in the game at the moment, you know, obviously it's his maiden season in the Premier League. We don't know whether he's going to be able to maintain this form over the course of the season. It definitely remains to be seen. But we've seen in the past the likes of Jamie Vardy, you know, no one really expected him to sort of thrive in the way that he did in the Premier League. So I think there's certainly a case that Pukki could be able to maintain his form over the course of the season, even become a captaincy option. I feel like he's definitely the one to buy and to have in your team. Of the other picks, as I said, Abraham at the moment would be my other choice. I think the fact that he plays for Chelsea is a big factor in that. And just because Chelsea are, you know, they're much better sides, unfortunately, than a lot of those other sides that the mid-price forwards play for. And I think we're going to see lots of attacking play from Chelsea over the course of the season. It seems like Lampard's sort of very much an attack-minded manager, and though it seems like defensively they look a little bit suspect, going forward they've certainly been very aggressive so far, sort of been fourth for goal attempts with 83 and sort of joint third for goals with 11 so far. And I think with Chelsea in this sort of youthful side, we're going to see plenty of goals again for Abraham as well, both top scorers in the Championship as well last season.
Yeah, certainly. There are so many options here. I probably agree with you that maybe mainly because of ownership alone, Abraham and Pukki are going to be the two that are going to form most people's front lines. And it kind of becomes a case of, right, do I go 3-5-2 or do I go 3-4-3? And if I have my third, who is it going to be? For me at the moment, it's between kind of long-term wildcard thinking for next week. It's going to be between the Bap and the Poor. The Bap being Barnes alongside Abraham and Pukki, the Poor being Wilson alongside them. I don't really mind Ashley Barnes, of course. I think the Barnes train is going to be okay in the end. He has slipped a tiny bit in terms of the stats, but not too far, to be honest. A couple of pretty tame performances, as you mentioned, since I got aboard. Hopefully it's be remedied against Norwich. But with these guys, the beauty of them is the price point. Like Pukki and Abraham, as I said, probably going to be the two players who are going to be in many teams. But other than that, like the great thing is that you can mostly swap around within the price point between these players, provided you have a ceiling of, you know, 8 million to mess with. Like Wilson's down 7.8 now, isn't he? So it may well be a case of your judgment when it comes down to the fixtures plus the form plus how you think the team is looking. So for example, for me, with thinking about Wilson is because in game week 7 Bournemouth got West Ham at home. Wilson loves to play West Ham. Obviously they kept a clean sheet tonight, but aren't historically the best at keeping out big chances particularly. Game week 8 they've got Arsenal away. In game week 9 they've got Norwich at home. So three nice games there for Wilson, which may be something which could promise points, especially because he's a little bit more expensive than the other guys in that bracket, the likes of Barnes for example. So he might be one people weren't able to get to. It's just basically your managerial decision there. And in terms of David Gameford's question on Haller versus Abraham, I think after next week, it's got to be Abraham. At the moment, I think you'd stick, if you own Haller, stick with Haller and then take it from there.
Yeah, definitely. I think sort of moving on to the sort of final question from FPL Prince and Hindu Monkey, who are asking about Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang at Arsenal. And with Lacazette injured, do we consider him or ignore altogether? And Nick Kahn also asked a similar question as to whether we should be swapping Aguero for Aubameyang. And sort of to answer the second question, I would definitely probably say if you've got Aguero, then you probably don't own Sterling, but and I would hold Aguero. He's started brilliantly this season. I wouldn't be thinking about selling him unless you were sort of like tripled up on the Manchester City attack and you're thinking about a little bit of disinvestment. Then, yeah, fair enough, move to Aubameyang. But I thought it kind of relates also to the previous question, Tom, a little bit, because I was thinking when I wildcard, and that's probably going to be at the moment, I'm sort of planning for sort of the international break, the next one around game week 8, game week 9. Probably, I will be certainly looking at Aubameyang as a potential premium forward option that I would be considering getting in to sort of really take advantage of some of those Arsenal fixtures that are coming up. And of course, he is much more expensive than these other forwards that have been delivering. So he hasn't really been talked about too much in terms of the goals, but he has 5 goals to his name so far. He has an assist alongside Callum Wilson. He's another player that sort of scored in or returned FPL points in every single game week this season. And with those Arsenal fixtures really turning, you really have to consider him surely as an option. I mean, game week 8 to game week 16, they don't play any of the top 6. It's just, you know, they're all playing sort of the likes of Bournemouth at home, Sheffield United away, Palace, Wolves, Leicester, Southampton, Norwich, Brighton, West Ham. I mean, that's just, you don't get a better fixture run than that, do you, surely? And if you're thinking about Arsenal players, surely you've got to consider someone like Aubameyang in your wild card, or are you just, you know, avoiding the question of a sort of a premium forward altogether at this moment in time?
I think it really does come down to a binary of Aubameyang, doesn't it? Because Arsenal are Aubameyang or bust in terms of the choices as it stands. Pepe's obviously not lived up to the billing, but you're right. Like between game weeks 8 and 16, 5 out of 9 of those games are at home, and those games are at home to the likes of Bournemouth, Southampton, and Brighton. So I can see where I do love Aubameyang. I know what he offers. Is he going to be able to fit into a wildcard team, which also includes Raheem Sterling, KDB and Salah/Mane, and probably I'm going to be keeping TAA, and I'm probably going to be keeping Luka Dean. Is he going to fit into that mix? Probably not. Do I want to back Arsenal in FPL and go through the dual pain when they let me down as they did last year? Again, probably not. So it may be that he's the guy who misses out when I post my wildcard team in a couple of weeks' time. He'll be the one that everyone writes, oh, no Aubameyang. But I suspect it's just going to be that way. It's really hard to filter these people in. And I find it quite difficult at the moment, like in my sandwich, to try to think about how everyone's going to go in. I just can't at the moment see how Aubameyang fits in, so I don't see who I'm going to lose. So at the moment, I prefer to keep it without Aubameyang, but I've got a lot to think about over the next kind of couple of weeks. So from Friday onwards, I'll be in full thought mode, and I will build an Aubameyang team. It's just whether I want to go forward with that at the expense of kind of having the depth of quality, because that would just be focusing all of my resources into 3 or 4 key players. I'm not too sure I can quite build a balanced team that I'm going to like for the long term doing that. So love Aubameyang if you can fit him in, and you have no qualms about making kind of changes like I'm talking about, then do it. Great. For me, I've got to rethink about it, but I know what he can offer. Those games are great. Would I capture Aubameyang in those games? Yes, I would. Will Man City or Liverpool have better games around that sort of period? No, they won't. Game week 8, for example, we play Bournemouth at home. Elsewhere, Liverpool got Leicester at home. Man City have got Wolves at home. I think I might have to just hope that my current premiums can carry me through that, because I'm probably not going to mess with them on the wild card. But yeah, it's a tough one. It's definitely one that I'm thinking of. Undecided answer there, I'm afraid, but it's been one of those sorts of game weeks, hasn't it? So how are we going to move on to the next game week? Let's move on to the transfers and captains then, Nick. And yeah, after we've both kind of, well, you hit the 50s, didn't you, just? But after a subpar game week yet again, what are you going to do? Are you ripping it all apart? Are you making lots of changes, or are you going completely opposite and just sitting on your hands?
So yeah, I think at the moment I might just be sitting on my hands, to be honest. I think I do have a move in mind, but it's going to be two transfers for the following game week. So I think it's only a short time frame until the next game because we've got the Friday night fixture. So I'm probably just going to sit on it. I mean, I look at my team and sort of the Liverpool players beside so Chelsea playing Liverpool is a key element of my team next game week with sort of the three Liverpool players in the double defence. And that is concerning me, of course. But looking at the rest of the team, I'm pretty happy with the setup. And everyone else is in good shape for this game week. So there's no one really that needs to go. I think the only thing I could have probably done is that minus four move to get Abraham in and to downgrade Van Dijk. But even if I'd done that, I'd have still ended up with four players in that game. So it's not like I'm disinvesting in the big game, which I like to do whenever sort of a top six side plays another top six side. I like to sort of have as little limited involvement as possible. So I think with that in mind, I think there's no point in me taking the minus four again this game week to make that move. So I might as well roll it and hope that Van Dijk can keep Tammy Abraham at bay. So I think that's my plan at least this game week. And the captaincy at the moment still on Raheem Sterling. I'm sucker for punishment. So I'm coming back for a third time. And as I said, I'm fine if he doesn't return again. So yeah, that's my team anyway. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm going to be the same with Raheem Sterling. Well, let's say fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, so I don't know. I'm doing it again. Can't look past them home against Watford. I think if he does play against Shakhtar in midweek, plays a lot of minutes, then maybe Kevin De Bruyne is on the menu. But I'm fairly sure I'll be putting on Sterling. I do like the idea of putting on Salah against Chelsea, you know, because Chelsea will give him a lot of space because they'll be pushing forward and trying to attack. And you can imagine Salah exposing naivety from young Tomori and young Happy Zuma at the back. But who knows? Imagine Azpilicueta trying to keep up with Salah. Well, what a frightening prospect for Chelsea. But in terms of transfers, I made a transfer on Sunday night. As I mentioned earlier on, I sold Dendonka and I bought Cousin Todd in to just basically catch the rise. He's going to be in any wildcard team that I'd make for obvious reasons. And yeah, I need an 11th man this week. I'm just praying that there's no injuries in the aforementioned European matchups to come this midweek.
You just confessed to breaking the Austin rule there just at the end.
Well, I haven't brought in a player who's going to be playing in midweek. So I think on a technicality, I've gotten away with it. But yeah, it's not ideal, but I've got very little wiggle room with the wild card that I want to do anyway. I'm on 0.1 million, so it kind of made sense to give myself as much as I could and hope for the best.
Plus you're adding depth to your team as well to a certain extent anyway. So yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, thank you for listening to this scripted performance of Who Got the Assist? just to say, of course, who we are. We are Who Got the Assist. You can find us on Twitter at WGTA_FPL or at WGTA_Nick. And make sure to listen and subscribe across the podding spectrum. And our league code, if you haven't joined our mini league already, is EIKX03.
Cool. And there's a theme every week. This week may have been pretty obvious. I think we've done it. I've definitely given it away from the very, very beginning in the past. But I think this week is probably supremely obvious. Hopefully you've enjoyed it as much as we have. Last week it was Back to the Future. And we'll be back next week with FPL Dare, that Antipodean Dare merchant. That I'm very much looking forward to having Dean on. Absolutely love his videos. Definitely check him out on Twitter at FPL Dare. He'll be on next week. And that's actually a part of an Antipodean double up, actually, because Alex Ball's coming on in game week 7. So yeah, two men from Down Under coming up as guests, which we're really looking forward to. Both the guys are teachers, so obviously it's their half term, so they've got time to record a podcast. Don't forget the Friday deadline. In the meantime, I hope this assists you and we'll speak to you very, very soon. Goodbye.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.